listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
We are recording this at a long distance from each other, from opposite sides of the Bay, because I couldn't bothered to get on BART. So
when I got your text, I was like, all right, I get it. It's sometimes too rough. Sometimes it just
especially
can't do it.
Especially with the goddamn darkness, with fucking the time change and how it gets dark at 4 o'clock.
You're just like, I'm going to bed now. It's only four.
Yeah.
Do you feel tired with the darkness?
I feel completely tired, exhausted, depressed, and defeated because our nation is facing a horrendous apocalypse.
Indeed it is. It's fucking scary. It's scary as hell. Tuesday night was like the worst, was one of the worst nights of my life, just like watching those electoral votes roll in or not roll in. But I do feel pretty motivated today. I feel like that changes for me a lot, where I was in a bit of a slump for probably half of last week, even though I went to some protests, and definitely in like major denial, feeling like going back to New York Times and going back to different sites to check the polls again and being like, wait, did that really happen? Hold on, are you sure? Like, just in disbelief.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like there's a lot of action. There's a lot of work to be done, and I think that's motivating.
Yep.
For me, let's just say that. Yeah. Everyone else is going to come to it from a different place, and that's fine.
Yeah, we don't have anything prescriptive to say. We know everyone is dealing with this and, you know, at their own pace.
Yeah.
But I do.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. I feel like, so it's been a week now since the election. I don't know how I feel. I've been signing petitions, protesting, like calling my representatives, calling other people's representatives. I started calling like Electoral College electors in like Georgia.
Yeah.
Because they don't
have to. How about in Pennsylvania?
They don't have to pay a fine. I think Pennsylvania has like, there's some states where if the elector goes against how their state voted.
Yeah.
Then they get fined and they get replaced. So you have to, I mean, this is a Hail Mary, and it's not going to work. I mean, it's probably not going to work to try to get electors to change their mind, but they don't do it until December. So if people want to be calling
when
people,
is that official
they
vote?
Can.
When is that official vote in? It's like December 19th or something?
Yeah.
Do you know?
Something like that. I mean, it's up to everyone to decide what's a good use of their time, but there's obviously lot of other things that, you know.
Totally. There's
and
so
I,
many
you
things
know,
you
don't
can do.
Give up, don't give up on your local politics, because those things are like just as important as ever. You know, I called, Libby Schaff, our mayor here in Oakland. I called her office to, you know, encourage the mayor to keep Oakland a sanctuary city. And they said that... even if they lose federal funding, they're definitely gonna, you know, they're not gonna stop being a sanctuary city, but
right,
like things
for
like that.
And such,
but
yeah.
Like, what good does that do if people can't afford to live here? You know what I mean? So like all the local battles that we, you know, always talk about are, you know, just as important now as ever, if not more important.
It's true.
I think that's an important thing to keep in perspective, because now it seems like, Jesus, fuck, like, we all got to move to Ohio.
Right.
You know, and, like, that it feels very, I mean, I've had times where it has felt just very useless to be in California.
Right.
Where, you know, Clinton won, the margin between candidates in California was like the biggest it's ever been since the 1930s.
But there's still lots of fucked up shit happening in California right now.
Right.
So I think, I mean, there's still things to take care of, even if many of us feel pretty comfortable in the Bay Area or feel who knows what. I actually did want to say one other thing.
Oh,
we don't need to get totally into it. I mean, I have like lists and lists and lists of things and places to go to if you aren't sure where to put your support, which we don't have to talk about right now. But there was one thing that I read which, I mean, maybe everyone knows, but it was helpful for me to be like, okay, so what happens if someone is experiencing some kind of, like, assault or, attack, you know, verbal attack or assault on Bart or in, like, a public space? And I think a Muslim woman who made this comic or this sort of one-page comic about what you can do. Did you see that?
Yeah.
And I thought it was, like, it was very simple and really easy, and it's basically, like, deflecting. If someone is being attacked or verbally assaulted, the idea would be that you would sit next to that person and just start talking to them about whatever. Introduce yourself, say hi, I'm
Yasoon. Yeah, and ignore the attacker.
You just ignore the attacker. You don't give them any of your attention or time, and hopefully that person kind of goes away. But then if that person doesn't, then the two of you get up and go somewhere else. Like, you're like, hey, do you want to go to a coffee shop? Or, you know, just to kind of get that person out of the situation that might be actually very threatening and certainly is emotionally damaging, if anything, you know?
Right.
So just a small tip for those of you who don't know.
And the thing, thing about that is that once the person is in a safe place and the harasser or whoever has been, you know, neutralized, leave the person the fuck alone.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't want to, like, continue hanging out with you. Leave them alone. I love that. We'll put a link to that in the underworld.
I was just saying, I was just realizing that my whole week this past week was completely absorbed with the national election, that I actually don't know what many of the results for our local elections are. And so,
well, they voted to fucking expedite the death penalty.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
But there were just so many things on the state and city ballot that I need to, like, follow up with that.
The Citizens United thing passed.
Yeah. Do you know about, like, tents on the sidewalk? Is that something that passed? They are going to start
kicking people's tents off the sidewalk.
Fucking craziness.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, San Francisco is California crazy. Is not the fucking utopia that we pretend
no,
it is.
No, God, no. No, no, no. Not at all.
We'll have Very a link apologies. To all the election results, the California election results in the underworld. So we have two contributions from two separate recording contributors. Just, I don't know if people need this point of reference, but the first part was recorded before this catastrophic election, and the second part was recorded after. I don't know if that's really relevant to anything, but that probably will be our frame of reference for many years to come. So here you go.
Nossa famosa garota nem sabia que ponto a cidade turvaria esse rio de amor que se perdeu. Mesmo a tristeza da gente era mais bela.
Hi guys, welcome to our interview. I'm Lacey Johnson.
I'm Inez Esquerda.
And we are two participants of our project, which is DIY Art School. Historically, it's been called DIY MFA.
Yeah, so basically, it's a project that's exploring education without debt, and what we say is without life-altering debt, as art school is, like, notoriously overpriced. It was started by two people, Rebecca Arab and Rob Toms, a couple of years ago. And this last year, it was about six people meeting all day, once a week. We like practice and facilitate exercises and readings, and we have a rotating art critique.
Yeah.
And so in some ways it's kind of like, it definitely draws from MFA, traditional MFA programs, but it's also open to be whatever it is we want it to be.
Yeah, I think we use that as a starting place to just kind of meet and be like, okay, we're not in an MFA program. This is like an FU MFA program, and we, like, want to make it better, and we don't want to take on those debts, and, like, there's so many people who are interested in art and, like, you know, spend a lot of time thinking about it and making stuff and, like, want to talk to other people who are also involved deeply in those, you know, art processes or whatever, but, like, it's so hard to just organize outside of an art school kind of model. So I think this is the second year of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the second semester that me and you have been in it.
Yeah.
So last semester when we were doing the like once a week meeting and like all the stuff you just said, like the critiques and everything, like one thing that I thought was cool for me, I just like working with people, I think. So it was good to have like a start off point to be like, okay, I have this idea, I'm going to do it as DIY MFA, or like, let's do this project as DIY MFA, or like, I felt that it like gave me like a base to like not just be just like some rando girl out in the world, but like, oh, we have this project all together, and it's kind of like an FU art school kind of thing.
And so kind of like the different folk, like every person had their own individual learning plan or goals they kind of wanted to accomplish or focus on, but at the same time, similarly to coming together with other folks in art school, we got exposed to what other people's areas of interest and expertise are. And like Lacey, for example, is really interested in animatronics and simple mechanisms. So she used that as a way to kind of like do economic analysis, right? So it kind of combined a lot of different things. And we made an actual, what was it?
Oh yeah, we did physics reflected in social movements class. We kind of looked at like, well, yeah, animatronics, but we made like a simple like automata.
Automata.
I still don't know how to say it. I like it's
we
a word.
Automata.
Like one of those, you know, like in the 1700s in Europe, all the watchmakers showed off their skills by making like fancy dolls that could write their name and stuff. But you know, we made like
yeah, we made that, and it didn't even cost $100,000.
Yeah. So take that.
But I mean, we definitely draw from MFA programs. Some people that have done this program or project, like, are getting ready for applying to MFA programs. Mm-hmm. Some people have been in MFA programs and didn't like it. Some people are politically opposed to this, you know, structure of MFAs and would never, ever do an MFA. So it's people coming from, you know, all kinds of different backgrounds. And, you know, in addition to this art practice, we really kind of try to interrogate what and why is it MFA? Like, what led to that being developed? And what is the impact of that on kind of, like, art and creativity and creative people? Because, you know, MFA programs haven't been around forever, and there used to be other ways to be artists that wasn't going through an MFA program, and people that taught art were actual working artists and not just teachers. So there's, and, you know, art's also big business in regards to education. So we tried to kind of unpack that a little bit, too, and it's really been interesting.
Yeah. So part of what we did, you know, when we switched facilitation was for when everyone facilitated their class, we would, you know, do different readings and talk about it. And when we read that Sarah Shulman book, Gentrification of the Mind, there was that one part that actually, like, can you say that story? Like, there's that one part in there where she was talking about, like, when DIY or when MFA programs started in, what, the 70s or the 80s? Then she was like, all these people started teaching them who didn't have MFAs because it was like a changing of the guard. Like all of a sudden there was like this, they're going to start professionalizing art in this way and make it like completely inaccessible. But because it hadn't been like that before, all these people that were like, I don't know, I've just been doing this forever. Like they were the ones that were like teaching the classes. So it was like this weird moment in history, and people for like, we want to make sure that that's not forgotten, you know? Like, art doesn't have to be like this. It doesn't have to be like, you don't get to be like, or just, you only get to say that you're an artist if you've, like, gone through 4 years of higher education and, like, gone to a fancy school and, like, have, you know, all the debt that it causes and how inaccessible it is. And also, one of the resources that we looked at in this project that's helped me a lot just to frame things is there's this website that I don't know if people know about it. I'll just say it. It's called BFA MFA PhD. Okay. And it's this website that kind of just like organizes like the power structures of an arts education and kind of breaks it down and talks about like, or the part I like, talks about like, okay, this is the percentage of people that got MFAs and are still artists. This is the percentage of people that got MFAs and couldn't afford to be artists or whatever that may mean because they had to get, you know, regular 9-to-5 jobs to pay, or, you know, to be able to pay back their loans, and just like how like the finances and like the debt that most people who go through MFA programs accrue affects like their ability to then make art, but then like, but also how you internalize just like the self-esteem of like going through college to be able to say that you're an artist, you know, and just like,
and not just be able to say that you're an artist, but that, you know, to actually focus on and develop and take seriously your creative work and figure out how to kind of like advance, you know, your exploration of your art, your skill, and your practice. Like, so I think that we're doing like, you know, a grown-up punk free school version of what that could look like.
Yeah. And and coming together with other people who are in the same, like, vantage point as us of us was really cool, because like I feel like the Bay Area, it's so hard to have time for yourself, and it's so like, you know, just hyper like competitive and like hyper like not having time to yourself. I don't know, that's a big deal to me. So like being able to, you know, find time to be accountable to other people to talk about this stuff, you know, once a week or more was, I really enjoyed it. Like, I'm, like, a total slut for accountability like that. Like, normally, like, historically for me, I've been, like, you know, like, a bedroom artist being, like, oh, I'm making all these things, and I, like, can't find my doorway because it's, like, my house is filled with, like, foam monsters, but, like, I never
told
anybody.
I am literally surrounded by foam monsters as
yeah, you are. Yeah.
One thing that I really appreciate is that it's taken the learning process and made it, taken it, like, outside of just consumption. Because, like, we have to be active in every kind of part of it. And we actually have to produce lessons and, you know, think about the how to share the information, not just take in the information. So I really like that part. And, like, you know, obviously we draw on existing resources. And we've even, you know, a professor at Berkeley shared a curriculum resource. And that being said, of course, it's like, and that sounds really good. But it's a lot of work because we also have to research and plan all those lessons. Like, we're not, one thing that's been challenging is we're not just making art now. We're also trying to think about preparing to teach other people about art and learn more ourselves. It's not just the creation process. It's this other thing. And that comes with, you know, people's different politics and people's different ways of doing things. And so it's hugely challenging and hugely, you know, valuable and on so many levels.
Right. Yeah. Working with people can be hard for sure. But yeah, like I like that point, like through this project, God, I'm like all like, what do you say? Rose colored glasses right now. But like, yes, doing this, like, you know, we got practice facilitating, setting up the classes, but also how to set up like the whole semester and like do logistics for the whole semester. And then like, and I got practice, you know, during the critiques, like how to talk about other people's art and like thinking about the strategy of like goals for what I want, how I want to help you talk about your art 6 months from now and that kind of thing.
One thing that I think is definitely built into traditional MFA programs and higher arts education that we don't have is both a physical space. We mostly just meet at libraries or people's houses, and you know, kind of like an established system of mentorship, which is something that you buy in an MFA program, which, you know, can benefit you for the rest of your life. And so if you have a free art studio space or you want to be an art mentor, feel free to contact us.
Yes. Oh my God. Like, that's what I think the value is of building upon semester after semester of this project. Like, I feel like the first semester was like identifying our needs, and like the second semester, or, you know, as we go, we, you know, get more solid in like the readings and like critiques and conversing with each other. But there's so many needs out there. Like, we're organizing together in this collective, but like there's so many people that, you know, aren't in an MFA program, for example, or like in different art collectives, and like, how do you get shared art space, you know, besides spending $500 a month on a studio, you know?
How do you just get, you know, like, you just have to propel yourself into every single part, like connecting with other artists, you know, getting your art exposed to other things. So
yeah, it's hard.
La la la. Anyways, one of our biggest challenges as of late has been that we got fucking served with a cease and desist from DIY MFA LLC, the for-profit business. Ironically, let me just repeat that. We are looking for free alternatives for arts education, and we've been told that it's legally, we cannot do it under the name DIYMFA because someone copyrighted DIYMFA.
The effing irony.
And they say that we're infringing on their market by having our free, tiny little Bay Area collective.
Yeah. I, like, and this has been going on for, like, 6 months, but I'm still, like, I'm just at the edge of denial. I'm, like, just getting into the next stage. I mean, like, I've had anger, but whatever the next stage is after anger and denial, maybe it's acceptance, but, like, maybe I'm getting there.
Well, I think at first we were just kind of like, this can't be right. You know, because it said things like, you know, you may not use the hashtag DIYMFA.
Yeah.
You must delete all past references and your individual social media accounts to DIYMFA. Things like that. And we'd ask our friends, you know, they'd be like, no, that's not right.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had a consultation with a lawyer at California Lawyers for the Arts. And in fact, it's all legitimate. Like, because of that trademark, we are, and because of our history with this program and identifying with it, we can't even use the hashtag.
So wacky.
We have to delete past references. That's why we are now the artists formerly known as DIYMFA,
yeah.
Now DIY Art School. And, you know, if you have an art project or something out there, just, like, check ahead of time if it someone has copyrighted it, because, you know, we have to invested a lot of time and energy
and money,
even actual money, like in buying a website domain and stuff, and they just got to seize that from us, which is crazy.
You know, we had already used it, though. We had been using it before they decided to copyright it and tell us that we couldn't use it anymore. But it's just ironic because it's DIY. Like, they copyrighted DIY. It's so messed up. I know. Is this even real? But it is. It's basically, did you just say this out loud? But it's someone wrote a book, and what they're trying to do is make money from, like, the class, like, have their book be classes, and they're supposed to make money from it.
Yeah, like, you pay them to get feedback about your writing. And in some ways, you know, that is more accessible than, a writing MFA program, because that's their whole thing. They're an alternative to an MFA program.
But they don't have
accessible
to be, like, F you to us.
Right, but you still pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars,
yeah,
to enroll in this program and get the writing prompts, and also then they are trying to sue us, so...
Yeah, like, I could never imagine, like, the, not bravado, just, like, the, what is that?
The bravado. The bravado of it all.
Yeah, I don't know, sometimes words...
The nerve, darling, the absolute nerve.
I know, right? Like, I'll figure out what I'm trying to say later, but, like, I just could not imagine, like, wanting to do that, like, wanting to, like, sue other people who are trying to do a DIY project, and, like, we've been doing this, and we're just, like, six, like, ragtag, like, nerds without studios over here, like, on the opposite coast from them, like, we're not hurting them, like,
in one way we're not hurting them, but in another way it's like, actually, you know, because part of our whole point in the resources we've developed on our website and stuff is like, anyone can and should do this. If you're interested, you should just get together with some other people that are interested and do your own program, and you don't have to pay anyone for it. Or if you have extra money that you want to spend, you can try to pay people for it. You could, like, seek out people you admire and offer to give them money to, you know, teach you or something, but you don't have to pay a program like DIYMFA LLC New York City to teach you, you know.
They cannot sue the spirit of DIY.
They
cannot sue our spirit. Yeah, and I want to say that I think that people will be like, oh, how can I join or do my own or whatever. We made a little pamphlet, I don't know, and we're available if people want to, like, chat or email or, like, meet up or, like, talk about, like, our experience more. You know, this has been happening here, this project, for, like, this is a third semester, but there's, like you just said, I think that there's definitely room for, like, more people to start similar projects. And
one of our dreams is, like, that there would be you know, kind of like a unschooled artist lecture series, so artists, working artists that don't have MFAs, if we were able to have an artist lecture series, and there's a lot of people working that didn't get MFAs, and if that happened in the Bay, that'd be awesome. So if you are an artist without an MFA and you want to share your art practice, or just screen a film that you love, or read an article with some other folks, or even if you do have an MFA, but you just still think it's interesting,
yeah.
That's something that we would love to help facilitate. So, you know, when we were exploring the idea of HEX and just talking about feminist self-defense, someone said HEX the patriarchy, and we're all, oh my God, yes, HEX the patriarchy. And since then, we've essentially been trying to figure out how to HEX the patriarchy visually, artistically, and, you know, just in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah. Ines and I made this design that we've been putting out there into the world as a, like, embodiment of the spell of hexing the patriarchy. And the farther it goes, the more it goes out there to hex that patriarchy.
Yeah, and so we encourage everyone to spray paint Hex the Patriarchy on it, or at least, at the very least,
anywhere.
Write it somewhere.
Yeah.
And also, if you want a t-shirt or that would support our personal artistic endeavors, a Hex the Patriarchy t-shirt, you should hit us up.
Yeah, and I'm here today for you to do a live, pre-recorded dramatic reading of the tag. Conjured on the full moon by a lesbian creative coven, this sigilcraft hex was cast to manifest a feminist future and rain fire on the male-centric manocracy. So, if you like these shirts, buy the shirts.
Wait.
What?
How are they supposed to buy the shirts? So that's what I was going to ask you.
Oh, because then Kate will go, bro, there's a link.
What's...
Right? but we have...
November
11th, 2016. 8:48 p.m. We're in Palms, L.A.? Is that the name?
Palms. It's actually just L.A., but the neighborhood's called Palms.
Okay. And my name's Rebecca Arev. I'm from the DIY Art School.
My name is Sarita Doherty. I'm doing a DIY PhD.
And I'm David Whitaker, also doing a DIY PhD.
And you two were just telling me about how DIY PhD started in this very house.
I think we were on the patio 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you said, I have this idea. I want to show you something. I think it was like that.
And I had written your notebook. Yeah, I had written like the 6 letters DIY PhD in my notebook. And I just showed it to you. And I was like, and you said, let's do it.
Yeah.
And then we did.
Yeah.
That's kind of how you guys' relationship is, or what I've witnessed of your relationship, is you're just like, yeah, let's do this. Okay, let's do this. And then it's like the thing that you're doing. And it actually has a lot of meaning and significance.
It became a weekly, that was in the fall of whatever, 3 years ago, fall of 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And it just became a weekly meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was our DIY PhD, and we just started from there.
I was inspired by Sarita, and I met over 2 years ago, and I had been thinking about I wanted to get my MFA, and I had been, when we met each other, it was also a very synchronicitous connection. We met at a wedding I was officiating, and I just remember walking around San Francisco with you and hearing about this DIY PhD and just feeling so much resonance and being like, because I had gone and visited a bunch of MFA programs in the Bay Area and they were really expensive and I just didn't quite feel like they felt like the right thing. And then I was hearing about this DIY PhD and I was like, whoa. And then you were like, you have to meet David. And then David came to the Bay, and we met, and we talked, and I was like, yeah, I want to do a DIY MFA, and that's the next step for me with this. I'm not ready for the PhD yet. Yeah, and I always love telling people the DIY art school. We were called DIY MFA, and then we had to change the name because there's another DIY MFA that has it trademarked, copyrighted, or whatever. So now we're DIY art school, but I love telling people I was in this higher education program that met in libraries and each other's houses.
Yeah. Ours was a migrant school, migratory school, where we've traveled and had class in libraries, in gardens. We've done retreats in the desert. We've done a retreat at a lake in Vermont. And David and I met at UCLA, where we actually did an institutional MFA program. And we had really different experiences there, I think. It was really hard for me. I almost quit halfway through. One professor share his name, Larry Pittman, was rooting for me, and he convinced me to stay. And if it hadn't been for him, I probably would have left, because I felt alienated from myself there. There was a lot of maybe pressure, maybe conformity about how to talk about art and how, maybe even how to make art. And I had to struggle to keep my creative and artistic voice strong and alive there, because it felt like it had to fight to exist and to be visible. And walking away from that experience, I think I got a lot of positive gains, like institutional language and how to contextualize and defend my artwork in a Western art historical context. But art making is not about that for me. completely, at least. Maybe that's part of it now. It is part of it now. But for me, painting and art making has always been pure joy. When I paint, I become connected to the spirit of the place that I'm in. And that's why I've always painted, and that's why I still paint. I wanted to do a PhD program that could hold that joy and nurture it, and nurture every part of myself, because the painting is a physical product in a place that's reflecting how I feel and how my spirit's doing and how my family is doing. It's part of the environment, and that's kind of, the PhD fits into all of those pieces as well, where we can create an education that holds every part of us.
You know, it's become like a social practice piece of work for me and for our group in the Bay Area too. And it's gone, you know, we've had two different cohorts now, one each year. And, you know, we went through just even doing a call out and doing like an application, asking new people to be a part of it. And what do we want to ask people for in that process? And then allowing the program to change as new people came into it, with resistance at times too. It's like any natural group process. You know, we're like, you know, we've been a larger group of 4 to 6 people. And so we've had some conflict and going through like these regular group processes that groups do go through. But yeah, it's been a social practice piece of art, the actual program. Mm. And it's totally changed me as an artist. You know, I went into it thinking like, I should really make this just like an MFA program and have all the similar credentials and do studio visits and we went to lots of lectures, free lectures in the Bay Area at other MFA programs, which was awesome. But I've kind of come back to why I was first drawn to it, that I've come back to that I'm interested in this way of learning because I'm interested in re-remembering what's important to me and what's at the core of why I want to create and why I want to be a part of things, because it's part of a larger system of social justice, really. It's I read there was a call out for clergy to come to Standing Rock recently, and part of the call, the person who was calling out, and I don't remember their name, but part of the call in it, he said, he mentioned like education, and I was like, wow, like redefining where people get their knowledge and how they get their knowledge and what knowledge is important, mm-hmm. is really important for decolonizing our culture and for our social justice movements. And that's part of what is interesting to me about this as a project.
For me, one of the things I often share when I'm asked about the DIY PhD is the way that it weaves, like the thread of my DIY PhD is all through my life. like it's happening. We have our class time once a week, sure, but it's like working with me when I come home, like, and when I'm cooking dinner, or like when I'm going to my studio, or in my relationship with my fiance. It's like the way that we set intentions and we establish like a direction for ourselves. There's an energy that's a through line that kind of weaves its way through my entire life, and I experience it that way, and it provides strength when things are difficult, like a kind of sense of like, okay, here's something I can lean on. Like, I know I'm gonna have like our DIY PhD session coming up, and like it's a place to like land. It's a soft landing, an opportunity to really care for myself and for Sarah. Like, that's really kind of where we start. Is it's like, all right, if there's anything we need right now, if we're hungry, if we're like having emotions, if like whatever needs to be expressed and communicated, that's how we start, and we call that a check-in. And for me, like, that's where learning starts. It starts where I'm at. Mm. And if I try to go on ahead of myself, I'm not moving in a full like unit. I'm moving as like a segmented being, or I'm moving out of an idea of what I should be accomplishing. And through the practice of the DIY PhD, I've really learned to walk with both my feet and also with my feelings and all of myself as much as I can, and just how to practice doing that. And it's been a huge gift in my life that's, you know, helped me through some of the most challenging like unfoldings that have happened like since I started. It's just like you know, from like things like losing a relationship to like losing like a father. My father passed away in February, and it's like the school of life, or like the universe is the university, is one of the things we talked about. Mm. And yeah, we just, you know, it's like we're just finding our own ways of learning as the experiences of life come to us. And we experiment with a lot of different things. Like, we've, you know, we talked about doing the check-ins, we call in the light or do a centering process. We've experimented with making ideal scenes, like timelines, looking at different like syllabus structures. So we try like a lot of different kinds of things just to see what can work for us and support us in what we're doing. And then if we like it, we keep doing it. And if it doesn't work, then we stop. And so it's a very dynamic program, and we start and change all the time. Yeah.
This piece that I did in my first year of DIY art school, which is I built a mountain that I went inside of, and I went to set many. I did this performance many times and a bunch of different times around San Francisco. So I went into this paper mache canvas mountain structure, and I came out topless but with a googly eye painted on each of my boobs. And I came out with my eyes closed, and I started talking about memory and asking questions. And I would say, I have an announcement. So people would kind of listen, but it wasn't any kind of announcement. It was, what are you remembering right now? Or what was your brother's, like, security blanket? Or what is the sound of bones in the ground, or things like that. But I'm talking about that because I'm also simultaneously thinking about, Sarita, your research work that you did when you sang to the mountain that you live on, because you live on a mountain in Lincoln Heights and in a yurt, and you are developing a relationship with your land there.
Yeah.
In this verbal way. And I was like inside of the mountain and just thinking of like our connections in our relationship and how our work has informed each other.
I was thinking of listening. And when we started the DIY PhD, that's what it was about for me, was just having a time, a couple hours every week, to show up and listen. listen to myself, listen to my high self, listen to spirit, and to just start to collect my what I would hear or what I would see. And I just started to put them all in one place. I have a sketchbook for my DIY PhD, and I just started to gather these images that I would see that kind of became like a guidebook. And that practice of listening in a contained space in the DIY PhD has expanded into other areas of my life. Certainly my studio practice, but also, you know, my work with other people. When I'm with someone in my relationship with them, like, my intention is more to listen. So it's been kind of this practice for me of listening that's been really powerful.
I do want to just say the names of everyone, because our DIY, formerly DIY MFA, currently DIY art school, a lot of people, like you said before, were really interested when we used the name DIY MFA. It automatically got a lot of interest. So it's been a struggle. It's been painful to let go of that name because of capitalism, essentially. It's like I have a fondness, and I also want to acknowledge all the other people who are part of it, because I had the idea to do it through knowing you, but then my friend Rob Toms jumped on pretty soon afterwards, and he and I spent time making this whole syllabus for the DIY art school, and then my friend Grace Rosario Perkins joined us, Jose Nieques joined us, and Alexandra Barrio. Lacey and Inez also did another version of this too, but Celeste Sean and Rachel Stallings. I was on Tinder recently and someone asked me, who are your five favorite artists, and what would, if you could have your five favorite artists come to dinner, what would you make them for dinner? And I was like, dude, I know my five favorite artists, and I have had dinner with them. Yeah, but, yeah, and some of them are those of us in this program, so.
I would just say thank you to both of you, to anyone who's listening, and just, I love this.
A Pachamama came to mind that I want to thank Pachamama. All the medicine from the universe that allows us to remember in the best way for ourselves. Re-remember. So,
go
ahead.
Alright.
And if there's anything you want us to talk about, or if you anything you want to hear about from us, let us know.
That's right. And if you want to contribute to the show, we pay for that, so you should email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. Yeah. Now is as important a time as ever to get, you know, not traditionally represented voices out to the world. So if you have something to say, we would love to hear it. You can call us and leave a voicemail for us at 419-351-6606. You can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. We recommend staying off Twitter for a little while if you're feeling oversaturated.
Yeah.
And we should find out where they give, like, nonviolent communication classes and start shouting that out on the show. We need a lot of, like, mediation. I think I might want to go. We need some mediation classes, nonviolent communication, classes on how to have hard conversations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with people you actually love. I mean, it's like, I'm not going to all of a sudden not love my relatives who have
But if each of us take responsibility to flip one person, that can make a huge difference.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay.
Okay, Maysoon. Well, we're going to keep at it with this fucking podcast. And
don't sound too excited about it, Kate.
And from
this goddamn thing. Oh yeah, go ahead.
And from the bridge
to the other bridge
to the island in between, this has been Congratulations, congratulations, Pine Tree.
Ninguém bate palma, ninguém abre a roda, ninguém grita o salve a Bahia, senhor. Mas a gente gosta quando uma baiana samba direitinho de cima embaixo. Revira os olhos dizendo eu sou filha de São Salvador.